Welcome to the Last Week in Denmark podcast. I'm your host, Wizzy Magnusson, and I'm here with founder of Last Week in Denmark, Narcis, to discuss this week's news and offer you extra insight into what's been happening and how it could affect you. Now let's jump in. Narcis, hello, how are you today?
Hello and good morning. I'm really excited to do this project together with you. I mean, time to move from written form to audio form, right?
Absolutely.
Reach more audiences with our project.
What are the top headlines this week?
Well, I would say that the top headline for us internationals, because that might be a bit different from what the top lines are for the people in Denmark, would be that now we can all hoist our flags, our national flags, on the flagpole in our garden or anywhere else freely. So simply from now on, we shouldn't have to worry about our neighbors or someone else, telling the police that we have done that. Because one guy from Kolding called Martin, a mechanic, decided that he really wanted to be free to arbor, you can also say that, the American flag, right? So he went all the way to the Supreme Court to prove that he should be allowed to do that. And he won. He literally won yesterday. It was like yesterday will be like Friday evening. Where, by the way, we're recording this on a Saturday, so yeah. You understand why we're saying this. So he won. He went all the way there, and he won. And the Supreme Court actually said that the royal decree from 1915 doesn't really apply. It's not a legislation. So for many decades, we actually could have done that if someone would actually bothered to fight for this right of hoisting their own national flag. And you can imagine the how happy were the minorities in the south of Denmark, because the German minority has asked for a long time to be allowed to hoist their own flag without needing to ask a special permission. Because, you know, even though most of the national flags are not were not until now allowed to be hoisted, Sweden, Norway, Finland, Iceland, they had an exception from that. And it was a bit strange for the German minority that, okay, it's okay for the Swedish minority, Norwegian minority to have their own flag up, but what about ours? Why can't we do that?
Doesn't seem fair, does it?
It was how it was, you know. And it's. I'm just wondering if a German minority person will have went all the way to fight this. Will he have won in the Supreme Court? Or it was thanks to a Danish person that he has made these efforts to kind of free the flag, to call it in a way.
That's interesting. So the flags are freed. That is a big bit of news, and it's going to affect a lot of people's sort of feelings about how they can celebrate their own cultures within Denmark, isn't it?
Well, we have to understand that, you know, the Danish flag is being used with every occasion, right? So when we have lived here for, I don't know, 3, 5, 10 years, we also kind of perceive the flag more like a way to celebrate and not so much a way of showing pride for our nation. So we kind of change perspective, because right when we are in our own, our original countries, let's just call them like that, in there we see flag as a way for patriotic days and to show how nationalistic you are and so on. And it's many times that symbol is being taken by far right, and it's being used as a way for them to market themselves. While here in Denmark, you know, the flag is not about that. The flag is simply a way to celebrate. It's a symbol of the unity between the people that live in the same territory. So that's why I think people also started to perceive their own national flags in that way. That maybe it's not so much about the nationalistic feelings behind, but it's a way to celebrate. Let's say it's my birthday, right? And you are Polish. Well, you just go up in your garden and you hoist the Polish flag, because all the neighbors will know that it's your birthday. It'll be kind of weird to do that with the Danish flag, right? You're not Danish. But the tradition says that if you want to let everyone know in the neighborhood that it's your birthday, you go and put the flag up, right? So now you can go and do that with your Polish flag, or with your Romanian flag, or with your whatever, Somalian flag, and so on. So it's more about, you know, it's actually a fusion of cultures, right? We take these different traditions that are in Denmark and different ways, new perceptions over like a object, which is the flag. And then we match it instead of, well, of course, it will be complete assimilation if you will just take everything, including the object itself, which is the Danish flag. But instead we take the form, right, the purpose of it, and then we replace it and keep our own flag in a way to still maintain our identity within, you know, this Danishness, or sea of Danishness, as you can call it.
Do you think it's important for the international community to keep their own identities from their own cultures when they're living in Denmark? Do you think it's important to a lot of people?
I'm not sure if it's important, especially not in the beginning, for sure. I mean, when you come here in the first 5 years, I don't think that's even a question that you put yourself. That's more something once you have the feeling that, okay, I'm feeling like I'm settling here. What are the chances I'm moving away in the next 20 years? Quite slim. That's the moment when you start wondering, okay, what language will my children be speaking in the next generation? What language, how is my level? Because, you know, if you don't practice your own language, even though it's your native language, it declines, it deteriorates. I can notice that with the language that I'm not using as well. So people start looking for ways of using more their native language as well. They're looking to reach out to other people from the same community after a while. And they're trying to start building institutions around, right? Because now that you're looking for a place for your children to speak the language, maybe you meet other parents who want to do the same thing. Then you start making a little community. That little community, you know, starts building other institutions like associations or festivals where to represent the culture. So in a way, it's all about, it starts with the desire to maintain in a way the language. And then from that on, people get together. Because they get together, other ideas are coming and so on. So it's a quite natural process, you can say.
Yeah, sounds it.
It's happening.
So what have the people in Denmark been talking about this week? Perhaps if we steer away from the newsletter for a moment and our own content, what else is in the news?
Well, I think what's interesting right now is and what many Danes are quite concerned about is the postal service. It seems that the government is planning, or they're still negotiating and discussing with the rest of the parliament, but they would like to kind of free the market in a way that the PostNord, you know, they don't have like a monopoly over it, because PostNord is like a public company. At least it's half owned by Denmark, half, well, a little bit less than half, mostly owned by Sweden and then 40% by Denmark. But the point is that now the Danish government would like private actors to enter the market and try to maybe provide, I don't know, cheaper, if it's possible, somehow cheaper. But so in a way, they want to kind of reform the entire postal service so that they don't just give this universal guarantee that every post box in Denmark, you should be able to reach it through PostNord, right? That was the guarantee that they were giving before. So now they allow, let's say that I'm Dao and I decide that of the entire of Aalborg, I'll be the one delivering the mail, right? And then it's a private actor who takes care of that further on. And maybe there will be 10 private actors who want Aalborg as area that they want to take care of, right? So it kind of opens an opportunity, especially for international entrepreneurs. If you're listening to this, if you have a delivery company and you can provide a better price or a better service quality, depending on, try to look at for the tenders that are going to be published if this reform, of course, goes on, because it's one way to enter the market and create new possibilities.
I mean, could create job opportunities as well, couldn't it, if we open up the market? When will we know if this has gone through?
We will not know until October. You know that the parliament is in vacation right now, so they cannot pass any laws anyway. Right now, they use usually the summer vacation. Well, vacation, it's a very long vacation if you think about it, like 4 months. So until October, the politicians use this time to negotiate different laws, deals, anything that they might want to start, voting on once the parliament opens up again in October. So right now they are negotiating and discussing, okay, how should this reform look like? And in a way, they look a lot at the electricity market, right? The moment they have freed up the electricity market, in a way, they say that the price has gone down. That can be true, but that can also be not true, because during crisis times, when you have a free market, that can affect the population quite heavily, as you probably have noticed as well last couple of years.
Yes, we've all noticed that, I think, recently, haven't we, in recent times, especially since 2019, 2020.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just wondering what will happen if there is a crisis on the postal service. Let's say that it's so expensive to deliver to Thisted in the outskirts of Denmark. Would anyone actually want to take that? what will happen then, right? Can I still send mail to that area? But luckily enough, they are discussing that the islands and sending letters outside of Denmark, they will be still done by PostNord. So there's certain exceptions, let's just say. So for us as internationals, if we are worried that our letters might not reach, you know, when we send back home or when we are in touch with other people from other countries, that will not be affected by this reform. It's only about postal service within Denmark. So sending from Aalborg to Copenhagen, from Copenhagen to Aarhus. But as you can see, probably a lot the private actors have started to make a move quite heavily lately, right? The press, it's already done or at least delivered by private actors like Dow or Nojuske or so on.
Now, one headline that did catch my eye was the Nordic dietary guidelines have taken into account the impact of the food we eat on both our health and the environment. I just wondered if you could give us a little taster of what the findings of this research are and maybe a sort of summary or tips on how to live a healthy life.
I mean, I'm not an expert on the field, as you can imagine. The best I could do is to look at what the press release was about and what they were telling us as users, consumers, to do. So all I can do is say what their conclusion were, and their conclusion is that, well, it's not a surprise. We have to eat less meat. And that we have heard that again and again and again. And it started, of course, with the vegetarian associations, vegan associations. It started with the climate activists who started to talk about this. But not even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it was seen as not something that's common, right? Like people were like, they're just some extremists, people who just want to take away our right to eat meat. Well, now it seems that the entire debate, the entire discussion is moving to be a normal thing that we eat less meat and that we try to find alternatives to it. And actually, eating less meat doesn't mean just eat less red meat, right? It means eating less meat, point. Like eating less chicken as well. Doesn't mean that just because you don't eat, cows, because everyone thinks of red meat. Okay, I'm not going to eat as much red meat anymore. And actually, if you go to the stores and you look around, you notice that red meat in itself, it's much less often seen in the fridges compared now with pig or with chicken and so on. So you can see that the consumption has clearly decreased just by the naked eye. But I would say that, I don't know, like what are they trying to say now is that simply don't try to replace the meat with other meats. Try to replace it with more plants. And actually, that's because of the environment. Because until now, you know, they're always thinking about the health aspects. But now for once, they also thought, for the first time, not for once, they have also thought of, okay, what will be the impact on the environment, the way we eat in the Nordics? Because this is a Nordic dietary guidelines. It's not a Danish one. Denmark also has its own, and most likely they will be influenced by the Nordic one. But I'm just wondering here, like, do you care about these dietary guidelines? I mean, does anyone actually read this, do you think?
I'm sure some people do, actually, because I think most of us want to do the ethical thing. We want to live in an ethical, sustainable way. So if there's guidelines on how to be more environmentally friendly with our diet, as well as healthier for our bodies, I think that is of interest. I think people will, I would look at that. I mean, that's why I picked it out, because it stood out to me. I thought, oh, okay, because I'm from the UK, and I think there's more plant-based sort of dieters in the UK than there are in Denmark. I don't think I've met many vegetarians in this part of the world, in Copenhagen, where I am. And there seems to be quite a lot more meat around. But then I do see lots of plant-based alternatives. My wonder is what are the benefits and what are the drawbacks of plant-based alternatives, like meat-like foods, you know, fake sausages and fake burgers and fake... Because I don't know how healthy those are for you. Is it more that we need to eat more fruit and veg and salad and more stuff straight from the ground? Because I would have thought that would be a better diet. I don't know what the guidelines say. What do they say about meat replacement products?
They are not, definitely not including that. I know that for vegans, they seems to be the greatest solution to the meat problem, as they call it. But the guidelines do not even touch that subject because it's not a natural way of eating. There's fake meat and so on. So I would say what they say is that we should try to, increase the intake of vegetables, fruits, berries, legumes. They're big on that lately. Potatoes actually are quite okay. Not the deep fried ones. Don't misunderstand. Just because you go to McDonald's and start eating like 2 kilos of potatoes, it does not. You're not respecting the
chips
guidelines.
Every day.
Yes. No. They have to be some sort of baked and boiled, and it has to have a low low content of salt, which is. I'm starting to think that all of these things are kind of logic by now. I think everyone knows salt is bad. Everyone knows sugar is bad if it's too much. And I think everyone knows now by now that too much meat is bad. And I see now that also the fish is only recommended to eat once a week, right?
Right, and that's different, isn't it, from what we've heard before? Because a while ago, they would talk about eating fish instead of meat, and that's much better and it's much healthier. But that's actually been proven not to be so true anymore, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true, because you have to think on the overfishing, right? Because they're also looking, as I said, at the environment. There's only so much fish out there. And they cannot keep up. The fish populations can simply not keep up with the demand that we have for fish. So eating too much fish, I mean, fish is healthy. Yes, clearly. But eating too much fish doesn't really make you even more healthier.
Which goes back to your point that it's just common sense, isn't it? Because eating too much of any one food group or type of food, or drinking too much, or, doing anything too much is bad for you, isn't it? So it is kind
Absolutely.
Of, a lot of this is common sense, I think. Shall we move on to another headline that piqued my interest? So, 8 schools will participate in a national experiment for 2 years, during which they will not grade the students. Do you want to just expand on this a little bit and give us your thoughts on this feedback first experiment? Do you think it will make for happier kids?
To be honest, when I was a youth activist a couple of years ago, quite a lot of years ago, this was quite of a common, let's just say, request from the youth towards the legislators, that grades does not really improve anything. Like, it only adds stress to you. I mean, do you think that the grades you obtained in primary school, in secondary school, have influenced your life or your skill set in any way, besides adding the extra stress or reasons to be even bullied because of low grades, or being, outcast? Because I in my class, for example, I remember the kids with lower grades will always be like the outcasts in compared to the rest, right? Because everyone will know that's a really bad student. They don't want to be around bad students because that means they will not do well in life for some reason.
And there's almost a lessening of valuing that human because they've got lower grades, which is despicable, isn't it?
Especially because I'm just wondering, like, right now we have this very mainstream education systems that are trying to kind of fit everyone in the same mold, so they're not really adapted to who you are as a person. What can you really do, what can you not? It's basically that you have to see whoever fits the mold imagined by the state. That's the people who do really well in school and have very high grades, but that's not equal the that doesn't really mean that afterwards that person will be someone who creates value in the world. It's not a guarantee. It doesn't say anything. It just says that this person fits the vision that the government has for the young people. That's the only thing it says. So is it really necessary to have grades? What's the purpose of it? Just to see rankings? Why? I mean, you're there to learn. You're there to obtain new skills as a human. You're not there to compete against others. It's not... what do you get? Okay, you're number one. And... does it mean that you'll, I don't know, cure cancer tomorrow? That's not a guarantee. So what's the purpose?
I remember when I was at school, I was at quite a sort of fancy school, and I got told by the teachers that if you don't aim for 10 A stars at GCSE and get 10 A stars at GCSE, there's no point in you being at school. And I didn't get 10 A stars. I got 2 A stars and 4 A's. And I thought I was really thick. I thought I'd failed school. I thought there had been no point in my education whatsoever because I didn't get 10 A stars. I left school thinking I was a complete idiot. But it turned out I just wasn't in the 10 A star club. I didn't fit that mold. I was different. I was a bit off the wall. I had I had extracurricular activities. I was well into trampolining and karate and ice skating and like things like that, and hanging out with people outside of school. And it just, it has affected me. You know, I've never forgotten being told that if I didn't get 10 A stars, I was useless. And it has a lasting impact. So I think you make a good point.
I mean, we start with this 8 schools. Let's see how it goes. I really hope that the research, or because they're like a pilot, right? They want to see, will this work out? Will the quality whatsoever will decrease somehow of the students? So it's hard to say. These 8 schools might be the heralds of a new education system, and maybe even for the whole of Europe, because, you know, they inspire each other quite a lot here in Europe from one state to another. Or it can also somehow it can fail this experiment, and then it will put this to bed for quite a while.
Yeah.
Moving forward. So it's interesting to see what happens. That's why they are testing other things. I don't know if you have seen, but they're also testing to see maybe they will add another grade. I'm not sure. That's another direction to go, to somehow not only grade knowledge, but grade effort. How hard did you try? Well, you tried really hard. Well, you deserve an extra grade somehow to raise your probably general level. I'm not sure, to be honest, how I feel about this.
The problem I see in that is the comparison between the grades. If you get an F for the work you've done, and you get an A for effort, are you going to think, I got an A for effort, so I put all the effort in and I still failed, which means I must, you know, I don't know. That's what I think of straight away. Like, so I don't know if adding more grades is the right way to go about it. I'm interested to see about this experiment. Let's watch the space.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking at it, because I think once if this works out, I think it will be used as an example for the rest of Europe. Because as I said, when I was in the youth organizations, we were talking about this, that grades in general should be completely phased out. And I think we need to move in a direction where instead of receiving grades, you should receive feedback. And actually, that's what they're going to do in this case as well. They're going to provide detailed feedback to the child, how to improve. What do we do well and what do we do bad? What can you improve? And that's the only purpose that you should have at the end, right? Because, and that's why I really like this this direction. But anyway, let's see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So what else can we expect from the newsletter this week? And anything else you'd like to discuss today?
Well, I'm not sure if you have seen, but if we are to look outside of Denmark a little bit, and how much you look at the whole LGBT plus environment, but it seems that it's a very strange situation. You know, it used to be that Western Europe used to be the lead in this field, but now it seems that Eastern Europe is taking the lead, because Estonia, I don't know if you have seen, but they have legalized same-sex marriage. And it seems that there's an overwhelming percentage of the population who supports marriage equality. And it seems this development has happened in the past decade, barely. But then you look now at Spain, right? They just had local elections, and they had these nasty far-righters from Vox who got elected in different places, small villages or bigger villages around Spain. And now they're inspiring themselves from Poland, right? With these LGBT-free zones, where, you know, you cannot, for example, talking about flags, you cannot hoist a rainbow flag, and you cannot have anti-sexism protests and so on. It's quite strange, right? Because we're talking about Spain.
That seems bizarre, doesn't it? It seems we thought it was a sort of forward-thinking, inclusive place. And what's happened here? Why is this happening?
It's hard to say, to be honest, but I feel like it's a reactionary. It's a counter-reaction movement to the current, let's just say, progressist movement, because Spain has been quite, I'm not sure aggressive, but it has been has been developing quite fast towards being a very, let's just say, feminist nation. It has been run by leaders who had very strong feminist views, and they have done interesting progresses. You know, like, for example, you know that in Spain is one of the, I'm not sure if it's the only country, but it's one country where all the menstrual products are free. They're subsidized by the government, something that I don't see in other countries. At least I don't know about other countries, but I heard about them being one of the first ones. You know, and other moves like that from the government in the past 6-7 years has kind of, in a way, I don't think it has, not the entire Spain moves on the same speed in terms of progress. So some people kind of felt this change to be too fast. So they kind of now found refuge in the counter-reactionary movements, the ones who want less progress, who want back to the way it used to be. because our people are scared of changes. And that's why now you give a fertile ground to far right movements like Vox. So right now we are in a space, because you have to understand, progress never happens without sacrifice. And then all these progressive movements in the last 10, 20 years have kind of pushed more and more and more the norms without too much resistance, I would say. But now the resistance is coming everywhere. You see it all over places. There is a split in society, and there has to be a fight. There has to be a battle between the two views. Will it be bloody? We don't know. It might be. In history, if we look, it always is.
Yeah.
But there has to the society needs to go through a shock. It's like a shock during which one view has to win over the other, whatever that view is. Once that happens, that's the moment when things will become accepted and we can move on to a new stage in humanity. But that's just, you know, that's the sad nature of humans, you can say.
Always has been and ever will be, I guess, won't it? Humans are humans.
That's true. And I don't know how to look more at this, to be honest, besides the fact that I guess Eastern Europe will become even more accepting because they're taking it slower. There is also a lot of setbacks in there. For example, the Polish LGBT free zones, they kind of given up quite quickly when the EU said, well, no LGBT, no money. no money. Okay. Yeah. Let us rethink a bit our opinions about this. It's not so important, actually. Let's just step one. I mean, sometimes, you know, when you don't have a functioning water system or something and you need more money for that, sometimes you just have to put a step back on the views on culture or societal norms and be like, okay, we need running water for everyone. And that's more important for us than having a strong stance against one thing or another.
Narces, thank you for joining me today and giving us such insight into the week's news and a roundup of all that's been going on in Denmark. Where can we find the newsletter and when's it coming out?
Well, it's always coming up at 12 o'clock on Sundays. And it's coming to your mail. So all you have to do is just write Last Week in Denmark on Google and you'll find a Substack and you can just put in just your mail, no other information. And then you'll get it on your mail every Sunday. So it's quite simple, quite accessible. It's always free. It's always going to be free. So it's a way for you to stay connected to Danish society. It's a way for you to have something to talk about at lunch. Of course, the things that we have covered in this podcast are not everything that we have. It's written in the newsletter, so you can get a much deeper, just say, understanding of what's happening around you. And there can be opportunities. There are new ideas can come to you just by reading the newsletter. You might start a new business just based on the information you receive, or you have something to talk at lunch with your coworkers. And so on. I mean, there's many ways to use the newsletter. And if you have some ideas of what we could do better, you can always write to us, of course. And I'm really happy that we managed to do this podcast. It's first time, and we're learning. We're trying to see, okay, what's the best way to go forward.
Fantastic. Well, thank you once again. You've been listening to the Last Week in Denmark podcast with myself, Wizzy Magnusson, and Narces, founder of Last Week in Denmark. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.